You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, my nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a guest tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Who is it?
It's Vince.
Oh, yeah. What's Vince? What's a Vince? What do you mean you don't know? Is he a handsome guy?
Yeah.
Yeah? You still looking for a husband?
No.
No? Okay.
All right, I am.
All right. Well, I told Vince to watch out, just in case. Just in case you get your eye on him. Well, you want to tell everybody to stick around, because we're going to come right back and be talking to our guest for the next whole hour?
Oh,
hey. Well, tell
them. All right. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We got a great show for you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
See you later, alligator.
All right.
I've been watching you for ages. You're like a boat without a mast. Struggling with the tides of destiny between the future and the past. I have a lighthouse. I have a
well, folks, tonight, as Pooh has already informed you, we have a guest. His name is Vince De Niro, It's an old friend of mine. We attended some of the meetings for the Kansas City Resolve together. Vince helped Aaron and I build the Constitution Party until it was attacked and sort of neutralized by Charlie Duke, Karen Scarborough, and Sharon Ford. And he's a man of many talents. He's done a lot of things in his life. He's a police officer, and he's an inventor. He's a loyal American. He almost single-handedly stopped the attempt to disarm the citizens of his home state, which we won't mention tonight for obvious reasons. Welcome, Vince, to the Hour of the Time.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, what brings you out here?
Well, I wanted to come out and see beautiful Arizona that you've been telling me about for the past couple of years. And I'll tell you, it's one of the most beautiful states that I've ever been to. The change in terrain and the land every 50 or so miles changes, and it's really beautiful. And I'll tell you, you have one of the most scenic sunsets and views that I've ever seen. It's really nice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Sitting up here on top of this mountain, how far can you see?
Oh, God, I don't know. I can't judge distance very well, but I'd say at least 20, 30 miles probably.
In all directions?
All directions.
You were kind of surprised, weren't you?
A real surprise. A real surprise.
Well, we fed you and pumped you up and got you on the air here. What are we going to talk about?
Oh, we can talk about anything. One thing I'd probably like to touch on tonight is probably some of the gun legislation that's going through. Maybe talk about some of the things I did 7 years ago to beat some of the gun bans. And they're the same kind of things that anybody could really do. We're really advanced right now as far as where the gun control is going. But it's not like we can't stop or let the socialists in the federal government hit a brick wall once in a while. It's not all lost yet, you know.
Okay, I think that's a good idea. Why don't you, you know, give a little background and tell us, you know, where you were at, what happened, and how you guys got organized and really made a big difference.
Basically, back in 1988, I owned a gun store in Ohio. We dealt in Class 3 fire.
You said it.
Excuse me?
You said it.
Oh, I can say Ohio. That's fine. I'm not hiding from anybody.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're going to be all right when you get home after you do this broadcast.
As long as you let me sleep in a closet tonight, I'll be all right.
Okay.
But a lot of people feel safe in a closet these days. I don't know why.
We'll put Sugar Bear in there to keep you warm.
Yeah. But back in 88, I owned a gun store. We dealt in Class 3 firearms, and for those of you who don't know what those are the legally, what is known as legally owned weapons that are fully automatic and so forth.
Machine guns. Bombs, tanks.
Well, I wasn't a Class 4 dealer. I was just a Class 3. That's another license that I didn't even want to touch.
Water balloons.
Those are going to be illegal. And the deadly assault slingshots, too. But around 1988, I opened a gun store. I had a really beautiful gun store. We had a lounge in it, really beautifully decorated, tastefully done. I wanted to give the gun image and the gun store image a very nice professional look to it. And we did a very good job at doing that.
You mean you could buy a drink in this lounge?
No, you couldn't buy a
drink.
Did
cocktail waitresses?
We had coffee and donuts.
Band in the show?
Yeah. Well, we had a VCR and a TV, and occasionally we put on the girls with the bikini shooting the machine guns. That was always entertaining. Those tapes are always great, especially when it gets boring around the shop, you know. But we did a nice job setting the store up. In 1989, of course, in 1989, I was very happy to hear that George Bush was elected and Michael Dukakis didn't get in.
Because Bush had made a promise, hadn't he?
Yes, he did. He said no new gun laws. And we were, a lot of us were worried. Back in November of 1988, there was legislation that went through. It was the first, I guess you can call it the first assault weapon type legislation that was trying to go through Congress. And it was beat. It was beat like 350-50. It was one of the bills that got beat the worst in like 10 or 15 years. I mean, it really got slaughtered. And then after seeing that got beat, I think they called it a military rifle ban. But after that got beat and George Bush got in, I was breathing pretty easy, thinking that, well, we're going to be fine since I'm going to be specializing in imported military-type rifles, because those are the ones that are fun to shoot. Those are the ones that are interesting. Those are the ones that I've owned all my life, and I thought we were fine. Then the incident in January with Patrick Purdy in Stockton, California, started this big push, and all of a sudden, overnight, I remember the first night it happened, they said it was a rifle, that Patrick Purdy walked into a schoolyard with a rifle, and then within like 24 hours, all of a sudden, all the media across the country knew what this so-called assault weapon was. They already coined a phrase for it.
Yeah, that happened just about 1.5 to 2 months after I had given a speech predicting that someone with a history of mental illness on the drug Prozac would open fire on a schoolyard or a shopping mall and kill a whole bunch of people, and that would be the beginning of a tremendous campaign to disarm the American people. And also had written that in my book. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible to me that so soon after I had made that prediction publicly that the thing actually happened. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, shortly after you opened your gun shop and had done so much work to get it off the ground and really, you know, produce a living for you, mm-hmm. here comes somebody that wants to take that away from you. And lo and behold, this guy Purdy walks into the schoolyard and opens fire, and the world turned upside down, and all of a sudden there was a certain class of weapons called assault weapons that had never existed before, and still don't exist today. It's a deception. It's a ruse. Does that mean if I attack you with a tire iron, it's now an assault iron?
Yeah, that's true. If you look in any definition in any dictionary, and you look at the definition for assault or the definition for weapon, assault is basically an offensive move that you would make against someone, and weapon is you know, anything. It could be anything. A baseball bat used offensively could be an assault weapon. But that's something, of course, that's not, a baseball bat isn't exciting. A baseball bat being swung around on a set of Miami Vice doesn't turn you on, I guess, but something with flames coming out of it and a lot of shells coming out, that gets you excited. And if I can go back a little bit, back in 1982, which I videotaped in December of 1982, Geraldo Rivera, when he was on 2020, did a big expose on machine guns and how machine guns have been, you've been able to own those legally, even throughout the 1933 NFA Act.
Just by paying basically a $200 tax.
Exactly. And all of a sudden, now the whole country knew that you can buy a machine gun. Now, even though the show, even though they did state basically that, you know, there hasn't been a crime committed with a legally registered machine gun, they also threw in the Miami gang murders, the drug murders, and they threw that and meshed it in together. And by the time the assault weapon thing happened, well, going back a little bit, in 1986, that's when we saw the Firearms Owners Protection Act, whatever that was, that Reagan signed. A congressman from Florida put a little line in there to ban all further sales of newly manufactured machine guns. And you could see this pattern if you watch the media, how they set up an informative show first that isn't that aggressive against whatever they want to ban, and then afterwards something happens, and then afterward they go really hard against it. It's like they educate first just to wet the public, and then afterward they flood you with all this, with the hard stuff. So what happened was in 89, when this Purdy thing happened, I attended the 1989 SHOT Show in Dallas, which is the big trade show for people that deal in firearms and so forth, hunting supplies and that sort of thing. I remember being there, and one distributor from a company called RSR, I remember the one fellow, the salesman, told me, he goes, we got inside word. He goes, there's an assault weapon ban that's being planned. This thing is going through. And I really didn't think it was going to go through. Like I said, I figured, well, Bush is in. And I had been doing political research, since about 1985. And at that time, I thought the big boogeyman was Russia, which I believe it still is. But I looked at it from a Cold War perspective. And I still thought that many of our leaders, like Reagan and Bush, were on our side, basically. I thought these were constitutionally tight people, even though I knew that Bush, a few years earlier, had held up a North American Arms 22 caliber Derringer at a Fraternal Order of Police gathering and said that we should at least do this for the police and ban these guns that weigh less than so many ounces. Even though I already knew that, I never thought that he would go ahead and ban the imported assault-type or military-styled firearms. And he did. And immediately when he did that, during the time they were proposing this legislation, Stockton, California unanimously passed a law to ban these type of firearms, and they had a list of all these firearms in Stockton. After it went in Stockton, Cleveland, Ohio did it. They decided to go ahead and push this through, and then it came down to the city I was in. And they tried to pass it there, and that's when I went on the offensive. And of course, during this time, the media, knowing that we dealt in these type of firearms, and when we used to display the firearms, we displayed them by country, we displayed them by the style, we gave a history of the firearm, we totally went over the whole the gun with the customer, and you know, we did it in a very respectable way. We weren't selling out of a trunk of a car and selling the kids and so forth, like the media wanted to make the gun dealers look like. And we were also training police. I was training police at that time. When that happened, the city, my city, tried to go ahead and pass this bill. I immediately went on television. I challenged Senator Metzenbaum to a debate. I was giving, and I had done talk shows previous to that, on gun laws, on international relations and things that I was researching earlier. So it wasn't a big thing for me to go on television and do a debate. I challenged Metzenbaum's office in writing. We got a response. Basically, their office called the local station and said they're not going to appear. At that time, there were several other congressmen that I thought were on our side. One was Congressman Jim Traficant, whom I had done a lot of research and gave him a lot of research that I had done previously. And I was always told that he was a gun owner and for gun ownership, but that he's always voted for gun control throughout his career. So there wasn't any help there. So basically, our gun store was on its own.
Wait a minute. You mean Tom Valentine's favorite congressman is anti-Second Amendment?
Yes, he is.
Anti-gun ownership?
Yes, he is. 100%.
Just wanted to make sure everybody understood that.
Yes. He's always voted for gun control. As a matter of fact, he's voted for a lot of foreign affairs appropriations also that until myself and a few people in our area started passing out the trim bulletins, which are tax reform immediately that the John Birch Society prints up, and we started blowing them up to poster size, sticking them up at gun shows and union halls. It wasn't until then that his voting started to change, but that's another issue. So what happened, basically, I asked for help from the NRA just for some ideas, in addition to me challenging different people and different legislators. Didn't really get too much help there. The most that the NRA did for us is they had the local rep speaking to the press, and they sent out 60 notices to, I guess what you would call as key members in the area. That wasn't working, so I put out over 10,000 flyers at the General Motors plant, copper weld steel, the different plants in the area where I thought there was conservative guys that wanted to shoot, wanted to hunt. We had petition drives at the gun store. The media did show up because I was willing to speak. A lot of the other gun stores shut the door. They were afraid to speak to the media. So I spoke to them, and we got a lot of people to help out. And we had the biggest showing. I had a rally on, it was on a Wednesday. It was a city council meeting, and we had the biggest showing. The whole city council was flooded. The stairs going from, I believe, the fourth floor all the way to the bottom was filled. The whole downtown was filled. And they obviously decided, well, they would just wait and see what the country, whatever the country did, the federal government did to ban these firearms, then they would go along with that, but they weren't going to pass anything. So for people to think, you know, one person can't do it or a handful of people can't do it, you just have to make some noise, and these people do, you know, they will listen. They have to if you make enough noise on a local level. I know it's harder on a federal level to do that, but on a local level, you could really you get a lot done.
Well, that's where it all starts, and that's really where we have where the only place left that we really have any power and can do anything is on the local city, county, and state level. When you get on the national level, I mean, those types of elections and those types of games are pretty much controlled by the very wealthy and large corporations who send these little guys traipsing back and forth with little brown bags full of money and retirement homes and promises of jobs and all kinds of stuff, you know, if they support these this New World Order legislation and the socialist Marxist puke face cause is what I what I call it. But you made a difference, and I've been bringing people on this broadcast for years, trying to show people that, you know, one person, just one person, who still has to make a living like everybody else, and still has a job, and still, you know, has to make ends meet, can make a hell of a difference.
Yeah.
In fact, can make the difference.
Exactly.
In most instances, if they just get up off their butts and do it.
And let me say this, that when our city beat it, that reflected hard on the state. I mean, we were the first city, actually, that I could see up until now. And I've had Larry Pratchak, I do work with Larry on state issues in the state of Ohio. More recently is the concealed carry permit system, which the one that was trying to be enacted was garbage. We're looking for a Vermont-style legislation. The one that I definitely wasn't for, the one that they were trying to pass because it was too restrictive, where it got people in trouble. But it's not all easy, but it's very rewarding because it's something I could look back on in my life. If everything else fails from this day on, I could always look back on that and say, you know, I did make a difference. It was hard. I had to put myself out. It cost money. We had to put a three-quarter page ad in the paper for the rally and so forth. And, you know, it cost a couple $1,000s. But, hey, you know, looking back on it, I don't regret any of it at all. And by us beating it, it sent a message to the state. And I've been told many times by people that because we beat the legislation so fast and so hard that the state backed down, our state never came up with an assault weapon ban.
Now, you're coming from another direction also. Isn't it true that Clinton and all of his cronies in Congress are claiming that all of the police are behind the disarmament of the American citizens, the gun bans, and gun registration and all of this kind of stuff?
Yeah, the one thing that's funny, it's kind of, when I see it, I laugh. The police that I know, and I've run into a couple younger police officers. I'm a deputy sheriff, and I've been for 4 years. When I run into different police officers that are anti-Second Amendment, most of the time, and just about all the time, except for that I can remember is one instance where someone was just blatantly anti-gun, most of the police officers actually weren't educated. I went through the police academy in Ohio, and we have one of the longest. You have to have, you know, as far as Ohio goes, I think only California, Florida, maybe one other state, they require their academy students to go through more hours. So I went through a pretty extensive academy. Most of the police officers, though, that I've run into, even ones that don't know me, because obviously the ones that do know me are, you know, their opinion might be a little bit different. They might not want to tell me the same what they're really feeling, because they'll get a speech. But most of the, just about all the police officers I've ever run into, and I've taught martial arts to police from Florida, in Florida, Connecticut, got New York, Pennsylvania, all over when I used to go on like karate seminar tours. And I've run in and I've always asked them, what do you think about this? What if you ever asked to confiscate guns? And these police officers are saying, you know, there's no way they're going to do it. So when Clinton stands up in front of the FOP in Washington, D.C., and all these people are lined up in their little parade police outfits, and he's talking about banning this and that, and the clapping's going on. One thing I would say is, of course, the FOP is going to ask, you know, there might be 100 police there at the ceremony.
Now you've got to explain to our listening audience, what is FOP?
The Fraternal Order of Police.
And what is the Fraternal Order of Police?
Well, it's basically a fraternal order for police officers where you swear allegiance to the lodge, the fraternal lodge, and also to carry out the duties of the lodge. Now, the head of the FOP, Mr. Dewey Stokes, is a diehard anti-gunner. From everything that I've ever heard him say that had anything to do with police, he's a definite socialist. But when they ask for people, hey, show up at a ceremony, Bill Clinton's going to be there, you know, there might be 10,000 officers in the Washington, D.C. area. I mean, within the state, you count the states and like the tri-state and the and the local offices and the sheriffs, and you count all the police officers, you know, you have 100 show up. That might look like a lot, but there's probably about 10,000 other police that are thumbing their nose at the whole ceremony, and you don't see that. The other thing is the media, what I've noticed over the years, is they have a technique where, say, the president's speaking, and he's saying about banning assault weapons. They keep the camera in tight, and you hear clapping, but it could be dubbed in. You know, you don't know how many, you know, maybe only 4 people were clapping. You really don't know.
And they also stack these audiences.
Yes, they do.
They make sure that the people who are sympathetic with whatever viewpoint is being presented are the ones who are seated in the audience. Also, the Fraternal Order of Police is just another extension of the old Fraternal Lodge of Freemasonry.
Yes, it is. Matter of fact, many of the people that are in the lodges. Any FOP that are the ones that are on the committees and so forth that run the actual FOP lodge, many of them that I've seen are members of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry.
And they use the same code phrases, fellow travelers?
I've never heard that. I've spoken with many of them since I have a background in that. You know, we've spoken about different things, and they've asked me if I was traveling. I said no, and they were a little bit surprised that I even knew what they were talking about. But I've never heard of any. I'm not an FOP member, so I really don't know what goes on there. I haven't heard of any.
Well, you've already answered the question. If they ask you if you're traveling, that's what they're talking about.
Exactly. But they're usually surprised because they even know what I'm talking. You know, that I even know what they're talking about, because they would expect me to say yes or I don't know what you're talking about. And if I say no, then they're like, well, wait a minute, how does he know if he's not one of us? You know.
Yeah,
but I'll never join, you know, the FOP. I have no reason to. There's other pretty good police organizations. There's American Federation of Police, based out of Miami, which the head of that is very pro-gun, extremely pro-gun, and the membership is, as a matter of fact, when they release their polls about gun ownership, like over 90% say they're not for banning any guns and they're not for you know, taking guns away from civilians or anything. And that's a lot different than what the FOP releases, which I really question their figures that they do release.
So Clinton and all these anti-gun proponents in Congress are lying when they say that the police are overwhelmingly in favor of gun control, gun confiscation, gun registration, outlawing of guns, disarming the American public.
Yeah, from what I see, the only people that are ever for this stuff are these other little police organizations. Somehow, if they're like political posts. There's other organizations other than the FOP, like international, anything that says international, like the International Association of Chiefs of Police, okay, these people are definitely, they're anti-gun. And it's kind of obvious why. If you listen to this show, you probably have a good idea why that would be.
Not only anti-gun, but pro-New World Order, pro-United Nations, pro-world police force.
Exactly.
In fact, to get in there and hold any kind of office or position of any kind of influence, you have to be an avowed globalist, Marxist, socialist, internationalist, UN supporter, all of those things.
Sure. And if you start checking the background of the Dewey Stokes types, you always see that. It comes up and it's so obvious.
Morris D's who?
Morris D.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about this other guy.
Yeah, and I've heard him make statements also that police are for this and they're for that, but he's so vague and they're for what, you know. The only police that I could see that would be influenced by the gun control are some of the younger cadets, just because of what they've learned over the course of their high school years now, and, you know, they're in the ages of 21, 22, 23. And also, you know, what they're teaching in the police academies, but that would be about it.
Okay, folks, don't go away. We'll be right back. But in the meantime, you can entertain yourself with the Couch Potato Song. This is what the...
Are we off?
No, you're not off. You're on. Gentlemen, the Hour of the Times brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Our good friends down in Phoenix who have available for you for a very short, limited time only, a brand new newsletter and some non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets, real money. If you don't get some soon, I can't guarantee that it'll be non-confiscatable, non-reportable for very long, because one of the plans is to completely destroy your ability to survive an economic collapse. And sooner or later, it's going to be either reportable, and if it's reportable, it's confiscatable, or both. And one or the other is both. Now, if you don't understand what I'm talking about real gold and silver coin, the money on account of the United States of America, constitutional money, money in the law. Not that funny stuff you've got in your pocket. That stuff means nothing, is nothing. Take it out. If you've got a $100 bill, take out a $100 bill and a $1 bill, and I defy you to tell me the difference in value between the two. Bet you never thought of that, did you? It's just a piece of paper. One's got 100 written on it, one's got 1 written on it. Isn't that what the Freeman did? What's the difference, folks? That's why Uncle Sam's so angry with them. You see, but I'm a little angry with them, too. They weren't breaking the law, as far as we can tell. But you see, these same people were condemning the Federal Reserve for doing what the Federal Reserve does, and then they turned around and did the same thing and say, well, it's, you know, I hate it because the Federal Reserve does it, but it's okay if I do it. And I don't go into that. I can't buy that, and I don't see how anybody can. But anyway, take your $100 bill, your $1 bill, put them together side by side, and I defy you to tell me the difference in intrinsic value between those two pieces of paper. You can't do it. And if you can't do it, that ought to tell you something about the economy and the state of the economy in this country. And then look at how people are throwing this around on the stock market, how these company stocks are so overinflated. None of those companies have any of the value that's being attributed to them now. What's going on, folks? Well, I'll tell you, you're being prepared for a great fall. And once this fall begins, you're going to find out that there isn't any bottom to it. Most Americans in this country today, if they sold everything that they have, would be lucky to come out with $2,500 to their name. Most of them wouldn't have anything to their name because they're over their heads in debt. We've gone from a country where there was value in saving, for working, accumulating enough to buy what you wanted to, I gotta have it now. We've regressed. We've gone from adults to children. And we're going to pay for it. 1-800-289-2646. That's where you can get your hands on some real money and maybe save yourself. Or at least protect a portion of your assets and keep your family out of a ditch for a while. Of course, there's more to it than that. We're going to be making available to you some food storage programs. In case you don't know it, we're in bad straits as far as food goes in this country. And if you've been to the grocery store in the last couple of weeks, you know that the prices are going through the roof, and they're going to get even higher. It wouldn't surprise me that by fall, they actually begin to institute some kind of grain rationing. Think about that. Then call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646, and do it now.
Oh, people, why don't you come in here and let me talk to you a while? Let's just right up and listen to a concerned citizen speak his piece. I tell you a little something that my daddy told me. The basic fundamentals, if you want to be free. Cause son, there's something wrong internally. So if you want some freedom, son, don't want your country to be overrun. You've got to keep America number one.
My daddy told me, son, don't ever take your gun.
Taking over our land, and everybody's got a gun in his hand. I'm telling you, we've learned to fight.
Yeah. In just a moment, folks, we're going to have Tammy Wynette up here on this stage singing, what's she going to sing?
Something about guns, I hope. Yeah, song that Bill just played, I would encourage everybody to go to your used record stores. It may be hard to find. You might be able to order it. That was Grand Funk Railroad. I'm sure everybody's heard of them. The record, the name of the song is Son, Don't Let Him Take Your Gun. And the album was produced in 1978, but I can't recall what the...
Wasn't that one of those hippie bands?
Kind of.
Grand Funk Railroad. Wasn't that one that came out of the 60s all of the drug thing?
And then they were popular throughout the 70s. But
isn't that amazing that they produced a record like that?
Yeah.
Back then?
Yeah. 1978, that's right around the time the Saturday Night Special bands and Handgun Control was starting to heat up. And you've got to really listen to the words, you know, in that song. They really mean a lot. And it's a good song. And that's something that you should purchase, make copies of, give them out, send them to your radio, your favorite talk show, send it out all over, and get people to listen to it. It's a really good song, and it really applies right now.
Yeah, that's right. And if you all play it around Christmas time, we'll have Rudolph in the White House. Benton's nose will turn red if he hears that enough, I guarantee it.
And he likes rock and roll. He might even be humming to it before he realizes what the lyrics are.
Let's talk about... If you want to. You don't have to if you don't want to. Let's talk about some of the things they taught you in police academy that the American public don't know about and would probably be livid with rage if they really understood that the police officers are being taught that the public is their enemy, that they've got to associate with each other, that they're taught to lie, that they're taught many other things.
Yeah. Pretty much with the police academy I attended, we had really good instructors. Matter of fact, we had four NRA certified instructors that were extremely pro-gun. I do remember one instructor that was very anti-gun that I went round and round with a number of nights and made her life a little harder, which that's okay. However, there are a couple of things that you should understand. In the police academy, we were taught, when we interrogate, we were taught to lie to somebody. And I found this pretty surprising. The other thing, I'm going to go back to that, but the other thing I found really surprising is we did go over the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and so forth, but it really wasn't impressed upon us that this was the ultimate or the supreme law of the land. And they did teach us that, you know, state laws can't override the federal constitution, and new laws and interpretations can't override, previous rights, and that different rights can be watered down and so forth. But the one of the things that bothered me is that we were taught to lie. And, for example, if you would have somebody in your custody, and you really didn't know if they did a crime or you really didn't have anything on them, they taught you, listen, tell the guy that you got him red-handed, that you have that he's broken these various laws, even though he hasn't or she hasn't, and use some psychology on this person to get him to confess or coerce him into some type of confession. And one of the things that I remember the instructor telling us is tell him, hey, you know, you got a good-looking wife here. She's a young girl. You know, you're going to wind up in prison, and she's going to be calling her old boyfriends. And, boy, you know what that does to a guy. That really burns him up. And it could break people to almost say anything just so they can get out. And they'd say, listen, just rat on this guy. And because we really need your confession to really nail him, or we need a confession out of you. And basically, they didn't tell us this, but I've seen this happen many times, is that they want you to give a confession so they can take this confession to a judge and get a search warrant. And the search warrant would be faulty because it's based on libel.
Coercion.
Coercion, right, exactly. But the judge doesn't check that because the judge has to go golfing.
And he's busy, and he just looks at it, and he asks the lieutenant that he goes to lunch with and goes golfing with and knows his family. He says, hey, what's going on? Hey, Judge, you got to sign this and do this. And the judge says, oh, okay, give me it. He signs it. Don't think that there's – I mean, there are judges that do care and watch what police agencies do. Don't get me wrong. But one thing you got to realize is that the prosecutors, the attorneys, and the judges all eat lunch in the same restaurants. Their wives are friends. They all go out to dinner. They all work deals, everything. And the person that loses is the person that's on trial. And a lot of times people get the wrong idea, and they say, well, hey, that's good. The criminal should. They should nail him. Who cares if they lie in court? Just send the little jerk to jail. But, you know, you can be in that same spot. And they're not going to differentiate between you and the criminal at all times.
And the fact is, more and more Americans are finding themselves in that spot.
Yes, they are.
The fact is that right now we have more people in prison today per capita than any other nation on the face of this earth.
That's true.
Doesn't that tell you something's really wrong?
Yeah, especially if you work in a jail system, you talk to some of the people and what's. And don't get me wrong, the jails are loaded with the scum of the earth. There's no doubt about that. But there are a lot of people that are in jail that are in there
that don't belong there.
They really don't belong there. For instance, with the gun laws, since this is something I've always followed throughout the years, I mean, there's been people that have went to jail. A guy, I remember he found a Rising, which is it's a submachine gun that was used in World War II. The Marines used it primarily in Guadalcanal. But he thought it was legal because something was broken on the gun. His father brought it home in a duffel bag. It was sitting up in an attic. And he happened to take it out on a farm, and he just wanted to try it out, and he shot it. Well, the Highway Patrol caught him. They called ATF. ATF came in. The guy got, like, you know, 4 or 5 years in the pen. And, you know, these type of laws are a little bit ridiculous. This guy wasn't lurking outside of a liquor store, regardless of what the 1933 Gun Control Act or 34 Gun Control Act, regardless of what it states. A lot of these laws, you know, they're victimless crimes. If someone has a rifle or a certain type of handgun or has a, I mean, now with the new magazine ban, legally, if a police officer buys the new magazines that are serial numbered and it says for law enforcement only, if he or she quits becoming a police officer and doesn't turn those magazines in, they can go to jail. It's a federal crime. If they would happen to, you know, loan the magazine to their wife or their husband, and the husband goes out, if the wife's a cop and the husband says, well, hey, I want to take your gun out to shooting range and go shooting, and he takes a couple of these magazines with him, you know, he's in violation of federal law because he's not a law enforcement officer. And that's the other problem that we have in this country, is the difference between law enforcement and peace officers. And a peace officer is a police officer or deputy that is there to keep the peace. And you can't be keeping peace if you're throwing someone in jail, for instance, for owning, you know, having a magazine over, you know, 30 rounds that's sitting in his closet, and you happen to go on some type of call into the person's house, and you happen to see this in some states where a magazine over 30 rounds is illegal, and they see it and they seize it, and then this guy gets sent to prison for 3 years. It's ridiculous. These type of things are ridiculous, but they do happen. You know, they are happening.
They happen all the time.
Yeah.
And then you have, let's talk about that. Police have been known to frame people.
Sure.
They've been known to lie on the stand.
Yes, that's true.
They've been known to be criminals.
That's true also. But I would have to say the overwhelming majority of police officers, and this is just from my view, from people that I've ran into, are really good people, are not for doing the type of things to ruin someone's life. However, the problem is with education. You see, after a police officer goes to a police academy, you know, most people don't read a book thicker than a magazine. Even people who subscribe to magazines barely even read, you know, one article in a magazine, let alone reading books on the Constitution and Bill of Rights.
But I know where you're going to go with this, and I'm going to argue a point here because I'm not buying it, you see.
Okay.
Because I happen to know that every police officer knows that police officers lie on the stand,
oh, I
that they frame people, mm-hmm. that they carry throwaways, that they do all kinds of things, that drugs turn up missing from the property room and from the evidence locker, and that these drugs find their way into people's pockets whom the police don't like or would like to put in jail. And these so-called police officers, who the majority of which are such good, honest, wonderful people, don't say a single word about it. And that really pisses me off. It makes me angry. And I love you, Vince. You know that. But I'm not going to take this crap from you either.
Well,
what do you got to say about that?
I see where you're going, and I agree with what your statement was. A lot of police do keep quiet about misgoing ons in the department. That's true. And did Chuck Norris's movie, Code of Silence, you know, the Code of Silence, people cover up, and especially in the fraternal orders, of course, they're going
to
cover up.
Now you're getting to
now, it. Yeah, now, you know, that's...
They're under oath.
They're under
not
oath.
Not to betray a brother of the fraternal order of police.
Exactly.
Isn't that right?
That's true.
So, in effect, what you've got in the police departments across America is a secret mafia-type order that no matter what they do, they're pledged not to betray each other. Isn't that correct?
They are. They are pledged not to betray them, so, you know, betray each other. And it is rare that that does happen. The problem is with the departments is, like I said, there's not enough education to wake these people up. They don't know what their rights are. They don't understand how the Constitution works. They've been taught all through high school and college. It's an outdated document. And, you know, people these days seem, I don't know what it was like when you were young, but it seems like a long time ago, from stories I've heard, of people stuck by each other a little bit better, and people helped each other a lot differently. Today, it seems like when someone gets caught in a jackpot, that a lot of people just run from that. And I've seen that, because when I've made my stand against gun control many times, I've had a lot of police come up to me and say, "Boy, man, you're doing a hell of a job." And I said, "Well, hey, you want to sign this petition?" "Oh, no, I can't do that. "Well, you want to get on TV with me? You want to, you know, I'd like to have some police officers here when I show up on the news." "Oh, I can't do that." "Why, you know, you don't have to wear a uniform. You're representing yourself, but I'd like you here." "Well, I can't do that." And that's something that pisses me off, you know,
yeah,
a lot. Because, and I don't mind being a Lone Ranger, but it gets discouraging. You know, just like that Marty Robbins song, I can't remember how it went, but it went something like, I can take the thorns if there's just an occasional rose, you know. You know, and it's nice to see someone pat you on the back and help you out, but, you know, a lot of times it doesn't happen. A lot of times the guys say, "Hey, you're doing a great job. We're not for gun control, but there, I don't want to lose my job," and you hear all that other stuff.
You know, when I was a kid, nobody was afraid of the police. In fact, if the police came around, you felt safe and you felt secure. And if they didn't come around, you wonder why not, because that's what they were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was afraid to talk to them. Nobody, you know, nobody's heart started beating faster or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you're driving down the highway,
mm-hmm,
and you're going the speed limit, you're not doing anything wrong, and a police car pulls up behind you or pulls out of a street behind you or something, he may not even be paying any attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anybody whose heart doesn't start beating, who doesn't start looking around to see what they've done wrong and what's going to happen if they get stopped. People are scared to death of the police. Now, if the majority of police are such good guys, why is that, Vince? What's happening? What's going on with the police that Americans now are scared to death of the police, when I was a boy, nobody was afraid of a police officer? They love the police.
There's too many laws. There are too many laws that are unfair. For instance, the seatbelt law. I mean, I get the same feeling when a police, and I'm a, you know, I'm a cop, and I see the lights going behind me. I'm going, "Oh, geez," you know. But the thing is,
the truth of it is that they can put you in jail anytime they want to for just about anything they want to today.
Oh,
and if there isn't a law that covers it, they'll just make one up.
Yeah, you could pretty much. I've seen that happen. Where people were treated unfairly on stops, and especially in the eastern states when I traveled there. I mean, these guys are ridiculous. I've seen people with suitcases out on the freeway with the cops. There's a little girl and a husband and a wife, and the guy's just throwing the clothes, dumping the clothes all over the freeway. Now, I don't know what happened there, but, I mean, this is baloney, this getting pulled over, and, hey, get out of the car, and they go through the whole car and the glove box. And the,
that's illegal.
Yeah, it is. It's illegal. And
I should say unlawful. There's a difference between legal and lawful. It's unlawful. It's unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. It may be legal.
Right. Exactly. But it's a shame, you know, that this goes on. It does go on across the country. Mm-hmm. But as far as the police confiscating guns, if it ever comes time to do it, well, I will definitely be an opposing force there. I know many police officers will be. But I will tell you that there will be police officers that are going to follow orders. They might not like it, but they're going to go along with it. But the overwhelming majority that I have seen, that I've talked to, and I've been around police, you know, and I haven't been around police just at one banquet once or twice a year. I've been around at the bars with them, at restaurants, with their families. I've trained them over the past about 8 years. And I've worked with a lot of police, and these police have told me, hey, there's no way we're going to be confiscating anything. They could forget it.
Well, thank God for that. Yesterday, a man called me. Mm-hmm. A man called me. His friend was in his home, barricaded against the police, who had drawn guns, weapons out of their holster, in their hand, were getting ready to break down his door and shoot him because the neighbors complained about his cat. Good night, folks. Thank you, Vince, for being a guest tonight.
You're welcome.
And God bless you all.
Stay awake. Don't rest your head. Don't lie down upon your bed. Thank you.